Well, I've shared before that my ministry background came out of youth ministry. That was a passion, still is a passion of mine. Spent a while doing youth ministry. But truthfully, what got me into youth ministry was working with younger kids, both out at MCYC as a counselor and other staff members, staff positions, and doing youth worship at Lapeer as I was coming through high school, working with little kids. And so I went from working with little kids to working with teens, and then I started teaching at the college, and now I'm here with you. I don't know where to go next. We may be approaching a ceiling when it comes to age groups. I bring that up to say that while I have led singing here before and done similar songs to what Mike did this morning, if I'm being honest, my favorite songs to sing would be more the ones that we would sing downstairs, youth worship. My favorite songs to lead are the VBS type songs, the fun ones, the kids ones. A lot of repeat and echo, you know what I'm saying. In fact, at one point, I made a promise to somebody that I worked with at camp and went to Rochester at the same time, that if I ever was asked to lead singing at assembly at Rochester, that there was one particular song that I promised I would lead, silly VBS-type song. And it's a song where the chorus is very simply, you higher, 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 lift Jesus higher, higher. And then the next verse is, lower, 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 stomp Satan, lower, lower. You've heard these types of songs. Maybe you know that one. A lot of the songs that we do with the kids have this lesson of Jesus is better than something else. Right? Jesus is better than Satan. That's why we are doing higha, higha for Jesus, and we do loa, loa for Satan. Or we teach God is bigger than the boogeyman. Another song that we sing. A lot of these lessons of Jesus is here, Satan and all of his minions are way down here. And that's a way that we teach kids about Jesus is better than, right? Which is kind of the lessons we've been talking about as we've been going through Hebrews in our Sunday morning class. But a few years ago, I learned a new song that I haven't heard since. A friend of mine in college, he learned a new kids' worship song when he was in Uganda. And I've since learned that there are more words to this song than what he taught me. But I think it was simplified for the Ugandan audience, just the same line four times, rather than the little more complicated lesson. And I don't know if you've heard this, but I've never come across this song anywhere else. But the song went, I like Jesus better than ice cream, and ice cream is very good. I like Jesus better than ice cream, and ice cream is very good. I like Jesus better than ice cream, and ice cream is very good. Let's see it. I like Jesus better than ice cream, and ice cream is very good. Simple song. It's silly. But as I thought about that song, the more I thought about it, the more I like it. Because It's easy to say Jesus is better than Satan. No one's going out on a limb there, right? God is bigger than the boogeyman. Okay, we're on board that God and Jesus are greater than monsters. That's not really making a grand statement, is it? And we are so used to those Jesus versus a bad thing statements that sometimes when we look at what a book like Hebrews is doing, we miss what's going on somewhat. Because we think, well, you're showing, when you say Jesus is better than these things, then you must be showing what's wrong with those other things. And what we see in Hebrews is that you don't have to do that. You don't have to push something else down to make Jesus look good. You could take something that is unquestionably good, like ice cream, and say, if this is good, Jesus is still greater. And that's what we see in the book of Hebrews. Not talking about bad things that Jesus has come to replace, but good things given by God that Jesus is still greater than. Which I think is an even better message. And so, going through real quickly, some of the things that we've seen in Hebrews, we see in chapter 1, he has become so much superior to the angels as the name he has inherited is superior to theirs. We're not going to mistake this for an anti-angel message, but it's saying, as good as angels are, Jesus is better. Same thing with Moses. Moses was faithful to the one who appointed him. Jesus is faithful to the one who appointed him, just as Moses was faithful in all of God's house. Jesus has been found worthy of greater honor than Moses, just as the builder of the house has greater honor than the house itself. I hope we know to say that Moses was very good and Jesus was greater. And so we get to today's text in Hebrews 7 and 8. And he's going to talk about the priesthood. He's going to talk about the law. He's going to talk about tabernacle. Important things. Good things. God-given things to help the Israelites to know God better. And so he talks about the high priests. Unlike other high priests, he does not need to offer sacrifices day after day, first for his own sins and then for the sins of the people. He sacrificed for the sins once for all when he offered himself. For the law appoints as high priests men in all their weakness, but the oath which came after the law appointed the Son, who had been made perfect forever. So the priesthood had weaknesses. They're human. They had flaws. So, not saying they're perfect, but it was a good thing, and Jesus is better. In fact, the ministry Jesus has received is as superior to theirs as the covenant of which he is a mediator is superior to the old one, since the new covenant is established on better promises. We've talked about covenant a fair amount lately, as we've been going through the Old Testament story in our Wednesday night class and talking about some of that from the pulpit as well. We've seen the good things about the covenant, says Jesus has a better one. And, you know, we've talked about law a lot too, and we've been trying to bring out some of the blessings of the law. But Hebrews says very clearly, the former regulation is set aside because it was weak and unprofitable. For the law made nothing perfect. And a better hope is introduced by which we draw near to God. So very clearly, all of these good things. You kind of see the writer of Hebrews saying, tell me a good thing that you have, and I will show you how Jesus is better. In class this morning, we saw by using the allusion to Melchizedek, found a way to demonstrate how Jesus was greater than the priesthood of the Levites. The Hebrew writer wants to show how every aspect of these Jewish Christians' previous lives, their previous faith, which they still hold on to some extent, how Jesus is greater than every one of those elements. And so we read Hebrews, and we get the message of Jesus is greater than. Because you put something good in your life that you have, Jesus is greater. You need to recognize that that whatever you hold in highest regard, Jesus is greater. That's the way that we often talk about Hebrews. Right? These statements of greater than. That Jesus is not just really good, it's greatest. Jesus should not just be a really good part of your life, it should be the greatest part. Now, is Jesus the greatest part of your life, or really good? Well, you gotten that guilt trip before from the pulpit? Are you sure that your priorities are right? How would you measure that? If someone asks, is Jesus a really good part of your life or the best part? How would you go about assessing that? How would you show it? How would somebody be able to see that Jesus is first? I think a lot of Christians, if they're being honest, would say that Jesus is a really good part of their life and will be the greatest part of their afterlife. Does that make sense? And say, right now, very important and will be of highest importance later. They keep Jesus central. We keep Jesus central enough in our lives now so that he will be front and center when our time here is done. And maybe that's enough. Maybe it is enough to acknowledge that Jesus is greater than things like the law and angels and Moses and high priests and Satan. And someday we'll all sing his praises in heaven. And until then, he will be quite high on our list. A major influence on our lives. Very near the center of our focus. A significant portion of our time. Maybe that is enough. I can't say. I started off writing this section as a criticism, and the more and more I read it, that sounds like an admirable model. I can't say if that's enough. I don't think that we'll get to the entrance of heaven someday and find out that God has a chess clock on our lives, right? And say, Jesus time, not Jesus time. Switch back and forth, and we only get in if the clock on the Jesus time has more time used than the not Jesus time. I don't think that's the message of Hebrews. I don't think that's what is going on. And so I can't say if this is enough, but I can say that Hebrews does not subscribe to this really good now, greatest later philosophy. You're not going to find that in Hebrews. Hebrews is going to say anything you have now is either gone or it's less than. And if you're trying to raise anything up above Jesus, if you're trying to make anything more important, then probably point to maybe the rich young ruler and say, look, you are lost. Hebrews has that perspective of He's talking to people who are thinking about walking away. People who are thinking things may have been better before. And he's saying that that is a flawed point of view. Hebrews says, when he talks in chapter 8 about things like the tabernacle, when he talks about the covenant, he talks about them as a copy of things seen in heaven. He says that the time of the tabernacle, the time of the old covenant, the time of the law, while they are passing, and at this point they are gone, they serve the role of showing a glimpse of what is in heaven. It talks about to Moses saying that follow the pattern that you've seen. And it says that is Moses seeing what's in heaven. And it says it's not enough just to wait until we get there and then put Jesus at the center. It says that we ought to be living our lives with Jesus at the center now. It says even if it's just a shadow, even if it's just a model, a copy, we ought to be pointing ourselves toward what we're going to be, not a waiting until then. It says that our time in heaven is not here yet, but the new covenant is already here. We are living it, or at least we have been called to live it. Thought the next slide is going to be something different. All right. It says, we are not there yet, but it says the new covenant is. We are in that time. Kathy had asked the question in class this morning about a statement that says in Hebrews 9 about the time of the new covenant, and it speaks about Jesus in terms of one who has a will. And we talked about when the timing of that happened, and whether it was at death or at Pentecost or somewhere in between, it has happened. The will has taken place, and the new covenant has begun. And Hebrews talks a lot about the time to come. It's true. It does talk about when we get to where we're going. And Jesus is in his place at the throne, our eventual home with God and with Jesus in heaven. And it is a major part of the message of the book, but it is not the point of the book. It does talk a lot about where we're going, but that's not what it's trying to do. The point is found in, as Mike has been pointing out, the therefores. Says, here is a truth. Jesus at the right hand of the Father. We are headed toward heaven. All these are true. And then there is a therefore, here is what you do about it. Here is what you do now. Because of this, therefore. Jesus is greater. And we will be with him in heaven for eternity. Therefore, we live our lives today as a testimony that he is greater. Heaven is the finish line. Therefore, we run. As it says in Hebrews 12. The day is approaching when we will approach the throne of God. Therefore, we spur each other on to love and good deeds. Our future hope, our future home, should be reflected in the ways that we live today. if Jesus will be greatest then, he should be greatest now. Not because we fear the chess clock. You know, I don't want this to be that guilt-inducing lesson of, are you putting in enough time? Kathy puts up that, I see you did their slide. When's the last time you made it on there? You know, we're not, this, I'm not trying to do that, because I think it is the question of what would it look like to show that Jesus is greatest in our lives now. So not, don't do it because you fear the chess clock. But do it because our lives, like the tabernacle, are a model for what is to come. As they serve at a sanctuary that is a copy and a shadow of what is in heaven. This is why Moses was warned when he was about to build the tabernacle. See to it you make everything according to the pattern shown to you on the mountain. It's a model. It's a pattern. It's a copy. A shadow of our heavenly existences. Not in full focus yet, but modeled in the shape of our Savior. The things we do ought to look like the time to come. We don't wait and say, then it shall be that way. We do our best to look that way now. We try to be a church that is our best copy, our best model of what we see and read about and wish for and hope for and ache for in heaven someday. They may look different for each of us. We each have different gifts. We each come from a different background. We each live in different social circles. So being that model might look different for me and for you. So I don't have here's three steps of how to do it this morning. But I think if we are taking the message of Hebrews seriously, then we need to set aside that mentality of very good now and greatest later. And we need to find a way to be that model of showing Jesus on the throne, Jesus at the front and center, any way we can now. That's our task. It's a big one. It's a life calling. And we're going to do our best. We're going to keep reading in Hebrews. We're going to keep going through our reading plan and seeing what's in the Bible. We're going to keep looking at the story of how God reached his people over history. We're going to keep looking at the way God has taught his people on how to look more like him. We're going to keep looking at the story of Jesus and his life and what happened there. We're going to keep looking at the New Testament teachings. We're going to keep looking at the ways that God's people have responded with their own speech in poetry and wisdom. We're going to keep trying to figure this out, because if we think we're going to get this lesson of Jesus is greater and acting like the image of things in heaven, if we think we're going to get that wrapped up this morning, then we are oversimplifying things. And we're guilty of that sometimes. It's easy to say, Jesus is the number one, go be like Jesus, and we've got it. This is a lifelong quest. So as we go from here today, take the next step. whatever that is. If you need prayers from this congregation and say, there's been a roadblock in front of this next step, and I need prayers on how to get around it, this is the time to let us know. If your next step is saying, I need Jesus, I need baptism, let's do that today. Whatever your next step is, you're a lot more capable of taking that next step if you're not doing it on your own. If we can do it together as a family. So if there's anything you need this morning, please let us know as we stand and sing.
He leadeth me, O blessed thought, onwards with heavenly